I am Ashada.
And I'm Diara.
And welcome to Nationwide,
where young voices shape the conversation.
From social issues to politics,
crime to careers,
mental health to personal growth,
we're tackling the topics that matter to you.
No sugarcoating.
Just real, unfiltered conversations
with the next generation.
Hi everyone, my name is Ashada Joseph, and I am so excited to welcome you to the first episode of the Nationwide Podcast. Now today with me, I have two special guests. To my right, I have Roshana Trim, who is the president of the League of Young Socialists. And to my left, I have Caleb Braffitt, who is the president of the Barbados Youth Development Council. And today, they are here to sit with us to give their thoughts on the 2025 budget. Okay, so for the past few days, there has been a lot of chatter in the public and on social media about the budget that was presented. And a lot of persons were kind of iffy about it. Some persons were in agreement with certain things that were said. And so I wanted to get from you guys, what are your thoughts on the budget that was presented? So I'm going to start with Roshana first.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me today. I believe the budget was a well-balanced exercise in both economic responsibility as well as investments in human and social capital. The focus on ensuring that Barbados is resilient given the current global political and economic atmosphere, but also ensuring that we invest in key areas such as education, foster care, persons with disabilities, and all the other things which ultimately aim to support Barbadians in what we can admit is a difficult time, is one that shows that the budget not only is futuristic and forward-thinking, but also that it is cognizant and also grounded very much in the here and now and the reality of Barbadians.
So anything in particular stood out to you that was presented?
For sure. So when I look at the investment in the Barbados skills gaps, our conversations on artificial intelligence, digital technology, process automation, as well as if we consider the things, particularly on the increase in foster care, the solidarity benefits, there are a lot of things that really stood out to me and that I really find to be very sound policies. And I particularly would like to hone in on the increase, the 2% annual increase in the minimum wage, which does not take away from the fact that the minimum wage board will meet intermittently and decide and declare a minimum wage through the Minister of Labour, but that regardless of whether they meet or not, there's going to be an increase annually, recognizing that even between the time that the minimum wage board is convened, there is still a need for us to keep up with things like inflation and cost of living for Barbadians.
Okay, and Caleb, what are your thoughts on the budget that was presented?
In my capacity as president of Barbados Youth Development Council, what we would have done at the council is that we would have actually created a Google form to get the feedback of young people on what are their thoughts about the budget. I myself personally would have engaged young people from all walks of life, and it would have also been scrolling through social media and getting the thoughts of young people and what young people have to say about the budget. And coming out of that, the general consensus of the budget is that it gets a passing grade. But when you look at the global context in terms of which the budget comes in, it comes at a time in terms of war in Ukraine, we see war in Gaza. We see that the time that we're tariff war is also happening with the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and even China. So the budget in itself gets a passing grade. However, there are some things in engaging with young people, certain things that which they wanted some questions on it, even in terms of, let me look at example, the 20%, there was a 20% increase in terms of these Nazi chronicles, you know, the things that young
assault content, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the concerns that I'm hearing from young people is that, you know, you're taxing this, but for example, healthy food is still expensive, so that if there could be a balance, yeah, you get thumbs up. So for example, one young person actually said that even though that they get where the tax is coming about, however, what needs to happen is that you have to continue to create a more aggressive approach in relation to why the high salt intake is not necessary. We see, for example, scrolling through social media, the support for the property tax transfer exemption. That is one that was really plus. Not a negative comment there at all. Young people really like that. The solidarity allowance, even up to this morning, someone, a young person messaged my phone telling me, let me know when the location sites open up. But however, another young person also said that they hope that the process is online and automated because they don't want going to sign up for the money. So that is really the general consensus of the budget. It gets a passing grade. One is also too is that, you know, the government today continue to speak about sharing the burden. And we recognize that, as said in the budget, that a partial bounty is being shared in relation to the solidarity allowance. However, young people do look forward to in the very near future that the full bounty young people can get in this country.
So anything particular stood out to you?
Yeah, of course. But me personally, or be in the capacity of president of BYDC, in my capacity as president of BYDC, what it was saying that in terms of solidarity allowance, the increase in paternity leave, the 2 weeks, is seen. What was it here now? The support for special needs, which is very timely, and I'm glad that government did really look to address that, because we as young people see that as a need. We also see, for example, the cybersecurity operations center, and I believe that comes in timely. Now, even though the region that we live in terms of geopolitical space, you wouldn't say that, you know, we were getting a war with somebody. Cybersecurity is ever so important. As we've seen the attacks on the QEH, we've seen various attacks, and I'm glad that government is stepping up to be able to ensure that we can be strengthened in terms of cybersecurity, and young people that come out to university who has degrees in terms of technology degrees on cybersecurity will be able to get jobs.
Yeah. So you guys would have mentioned things like education, opportunities for the youth. Do you feel that there should have been more attention placed on the young people? Because some people are saying that they felt as though not enough focus was placed on the young people in terms of needing mentorship and programs and in terms of things like crime and stuff like that. So do you think that more focus should have been placed on the young people during those presentations, aside from the education and the different, you know, the money and stuff like that?
Caleb?
Oh, yeah. Well, I would take that question. So, the Barbados Youth Development Council for Contents is the National Youth Council in Barbados, and also is the umbrella group for youth organizations. We represent youth organizations in this country. And we are headquartered, but our office is at the Ministry of Youth Sports and Community Empowerment, and we work hand in hand in that ministry. So it was said I have first insight in terms of the various programs and policies for which government is doing. And if they ain't doing it right, you will hear my mouth. But since you're not hearing my mouth, means that they're doing some things right. Mm-hmm. So if you say, for example, it was the Block Transformation Program, Project Dawn, and no young people engage in that. And there are several programs out there for young people to engage in. However, I think, what was it saying, Roshana, you could help me? Because you can't carry, what does it say?
Close to water, but you can't make it drink.
You see, yes. You see? So that there are some maybe, but there are some instances in where that young, even though you can put everything on the table that young people may not engage in, but that doesn't mean that you give up on it. They try to still continue to engage them, but if themselves don't want help, they will not help themselves. Now, I'm not going to say that I don't hear young people talk about cost of living, how equal cost of living, but I always look at cost of living in terms of the context, in terms of global context and what the world is facing and what the country is facing. Yeah. Do I believe cost of living can be lower in terms that which will have an impact on the crime? Yes. But we also have the cognizance of the fact that we see, even in terms of the surge in robberies, I really love the robberies. I have to look at it in a context. So what may be coming up in the entertainment industry? That is something I wouldn't say, but you could look at the context of why maybe robberies may happen. And that also comes on back to socialization and saying, for example, if you don't have something, you could do it for. If you ain't got brand name, well, you may not got Nike, and you ain't got real Nike, you could wear another plain shoe. At the point in time is that your feet is being covered, and that is the important fact. So socialization, how a child is brain from certain things, that also impact in terms of the criminal elements. And And to say that they're not jobs, or there are several jobs, but it's still known that they're young people who may not have jobs in their particular field. So in terms, they have to do a labor analysis in terms of like the study of the jobs and everything. So they search and look at how, even though that there may not be opportunities locally, how you can even get the best, some young people who may not have access to jobs here and get them overseas. And also, because for example, Beijers of yesteryear, what they used to do is just to go overseas and send back money. And that also would help with economic development, economic stimulation in the country. So that's something that could still be explored so that young people could live a comfortable life.
I like the point that you made when you said that there are jobs out there, but it's really to find young people that are interested, because most of the time when it comes to youth, people say, well, the young people need jobs. But the reality is that some are not really interested in going to work. And I find that is a major issue. Roshana?
Sure. I think the budget please focus on young people when you look at it in a holistic manner. And if we accept that all issues are youth issues and that young people are as active or active participants in society, then if we examine the budget based on things like the extension of maternity leave and paternity leave, primarily who are the persons having children, persons under the age of 35, young people, that benefits them. When we discuss the solidarity grant, that is for everyone. When we speak to the Barbados Climate School and Oceana Beach Campus for fourth and fifth formers, that is for everyone, and that is for young people. Then when we also speak to concrete steps that the budget outlined about skills training and accessible training so that young people can compete on the job market, once again, it focuses on young people. I believe that if we examine the budget and we say that it did not focus on young people, it ignores that young people will benefit directly from a lot of the policies that have been put in place. And critics will obviously say that that more can be done. There's always more that can be done, and there's always improvements that can be made. And in democracies, and for democracies to thrive and develop, we must accept that. But once again, it must be grounded within the context, like Caleb mentioned, of what is currently occurring. The budget is not the only activity that occurs throughout the year. And so when we consider the Barbados Youth Advanced Corps, when we consider the mentorship program that the Ministry of Youth and Division of Youth has, job skills programs, when we also look at things like the Block Transformation Program, Project Dawn, that is open for young people to receive training, the push for the national youth policy that is still there, it means that young people are being factored into our developmental plan. And there has been a clear indication by the government that it prioritizes young people. If there was one thing that I could probably say that I wish that there was more focus on, and it comes from my background as a former president of the Barbados Youth Development Council, is that I really do want to see a very intentional approach to addressing the challenges that we have in this country on volunteerism, as well as youth organizations. Youth organizations, community organizations, they do so much work in Barbados, and they do it for a fraction of what companies, of what the government will do it for. Yet youth organizations remain grossly underfunded. Young people who work within the volunteer space, work within the NGO space, often find themselves having to choose between whether or not they should continue to aid in public good, social enterprise and social good, or whether they should go and find a job in private sector. And if we continue to have this debate, when we speak to things like education, when we speak to deviance and crime, it is impossible to have that conversation and address those things without addressing the challenges that third sector organizations face, specifically youth organizations. And that may not have been a conversation for the budget, but I do believe that maybe that was one of the things that I wanted to hear more about.
Yes. And of course, as Roshana said, and I always plug in the plug that Barbados Youth Development Council need more resources. We are grateful for the space for which the ministry of youth have given us at their headquarters at Sky Mall. But however, we need more resources. Now, if you can have that one-to-one youth-to-youth interaction to be able to solve the social dilemmas, you can see a greater change in society. But however, as Roshana said, underfunded, under-supported is just that so many variables that hinders the organization. And to put it into context, we have been around since 1969. So you are older than Trafet. Imagine Barbados without Trafet. So that we have existed for many years and continue to be under-supported. However, maybe the Minister of Youth, Sports and Community Empowerment in this financial year could be able to allocate greater resources to the Barbados Youth Development Council, and that we can probably in this financial year too as well see the introduction of the continuing international youth policy, and maybe which may lead to the Youth Development Act to have a greater focus for which the budget may not have touched on.
Okay, so we're going to kind of shift gears for a bit, and we're going to look at the topic of paternity leave, because within the proposal, it was announced that a statutory paternity leave would be for 3 weeks. So do you think that 3 weeks is enough time for fathers to be able to be home with their partners to assist with a newborn? Because it's a lot of work, and then to the mother is going through all these different emotions, and she would need emotional support for a certain amount of time. So do you think that 3 weeks is enough?
Last year, the league at the BLP's conference, annual conference, proposed a resolution that asks for an extension of maternity leave and the introduction or extension of paternity leave, because a lot of companies offer paternity leave. Some offer, but it's very little, and it's also not legislated. So it really is left up to the whims and fancies of the employer. We accept that this is not enough. 3 weeks is a start. It is a good start, but it should be recognized as a start with the intent. And there has been a stated intention to increase. But we also understand that there is a balance that has to be struck between employers and employees. And in consultation, of course, with unions, employers, employees, and all the other stakeholders within the sector that this might affect, I guess 3 weeks was seen as a good starting point, with obviously there being room and space to achieve an advance. But 3 weeks has never been the benchmark, not for science, not for most of the best practices that we see around the world or around the region. But I think that it is worthy to appreciate that we've made a start, and a start is sometimes all that we really need in order to get the ball rolling, to get what we actually want to achieve.
So going to the point that you made, where you said there should be a balance between the employer, the employee, and persons within the stakeholders, do you think that there should be protections for the fathers when on paternity leave? Because, you know, they may have concerns like, would I have a job if I go on paternity leave, or will I be discriminated because I'm requesting paternity leave?
So Barbados has very strong employment protections. And in the same way that the Maternity Leave Act does not allow for someone to be fired because of their being on maternity leave. So I can't say to you that there is no room for you. We've also just removed, with this budget presentation, there's been a removal of the stipulation that you can only have 3 periods of confinement with one employer, which means that that can be extended. Or you can have more than 3 children at one place of employment. So I would anticipate and expect that the same provisions would be extended to fathers, but also that under our discrimination legislation, that there is no room for discrimination. Anyone who is discriminated against because of a request for paternity leave, they're well within their right to take appropriate action.
I don't expect, a competent government would, of course, when building up the legislation to be able to ensure that this paternity leave would ensure that the necessary protections are afforded to the father. So I don't think that should be a conversation. I expect the government to be competent in it when it's carrying out legislation.
Now, switching to maternity leave, it has been increased from 12 weeks to 14 weeks for mothers who have singles. And then it is pushed to 17 weeks for mothers who have multiples. What are your thoughts on that?
I think I will let Prashana touch on that.
Once again, it comes back to balance. There is an ideal. There is a goal that most persons would like. I see 6 months being the goal that most persons speak to a lot. And I go back to balance, being able to manage the expectations, desires, wants, needs, and requirements that various players have in any sector. And so while we may be moving towards 6 months, and I do not know that that is the intention of the government, but we've increased the number of weeks in Barbados for maternity leave, it means that mothers now have a longer time to recover after confinement. It may not be enough. And so it really is for us to once again to look at this as a start and to continue to have discussion and dialogue. I think oftentimes we hear policy or we see policy enacted and we kind of believe that the conversation starts and ends at the point in time in which that policy is passed or shared with the public. And the truth is that that's not the case. If we are going to continue to progress and mature as a society, we have to be willing to have continuous dialogue and to acknowledge that some things that we may expect to happen immediately or that we may see as being something that should not take any discussion, should not take any dialogue, should not take any negotiation, that it's going to take a time because different players have different needs and different expectations. And so in balancing all of that, particularly with maternity leave, we know that there is a longer length of time for mothers to bond, to address any challenges that may, health challenges or complications that may have occurred with a pregnancy, and also in terms of ensuring that they are able to take care of their baby and to heal, whether mentally or physically. But then we also know that employers have concerns about the length of time someone may be out of office or away from the business, the need for them to find someone to fill that space, and all these different things that employers are obviously balancing. And then the other stakeholders that we may not even be thinking about or considering are also there. And so once again, I go back to needing balance. I go back to the fact that it is a start and one that should continue to allow for us to have discussion and discourse in order to get to a point where we are as comfortable as we can hope to be while once again managing and balancing all the interest groups that may be there.
If I may, I also think that in terms of the conversation of paternity and maternity leave, it is a conversation which has to be balanced with existing framework in terms of, for example, when your child is sick, the mother or the father gotta go and do a sick day. You can't hype on the world because you can't let the boss here because, oh Lord. But your child is sick and you have to be able to take the child to the doctor. So we have to get to a point where through the Employers Federation or Confederation, I think it's called, the Chamber of Commerce, the private sector.
Trade unions.
And the trade unions. Have that discussions and sit down, have that dialogue to ensure that Barbados can be a progressive society in relation to, for example, if you need mental health days, you need mental health days. For example, if your child is sick, you could be able to have those days that you could be able to take the child to the doctor instead of that. You as someone in terms of the company, have to have a sick day and then hey, but when you're trying to carry a child to the doctor or to do an important activity for that child.
And it is a conversation, sorry, that steps away from the budget a bit and really talks to how we have, what the employment contract looks like and what we expect and what is reasonable given the realities that Barbadians face. And it's not only a conversation that should be led by the government. These aren't policies that simply should come down to government. And while government should support and should urge and encourage these kinds of dialogue, it isn't one that should be overtaken by the government. So for example, exactly, when we talk about things like employment and when we talk about paternity leave and maternity leave, When we speak to things like flexi work hours,
yes,
all of these things, work from home days, the ability, like Caleb said, to have mental health days, to take care of children who are disabled, to take care of kids who are sick.
Yes.
And we can also acknowledge that this falls predominantly to women. It means that there's a bigger conversation that has to be had outside of the context of budget, and more so led by interest groups, by employers, that recognizes that workers and ultimately people who are the persons who are on the front line of making sure that businesses are able to be sustainable and to thrive, the backbone of businesses, are able to be seen as human. And we can also accept that there are practices right now that dehumanize people without taking into account their lived realities and their real lives. And so, but like I said, no, maybe a conversation very separate and distinct to the budget.
Yeah, I think those were some valid points in terms of like balance and understanding between the employer and employee, that we do have lives and sometimes we may need to take a break and we may need, you know, just a chance to get away from the workplace. Now, kind of shifting gears a bit more, it was announced that parents of children and adults would be able to sign them up for grants. These are persons who are blind, deaf, and mute. So do you think that it was a bit too late to include these groups in that grant, or should this have been done earlier on? Because if a part of your body is not functioning like it should, then that is more or less considered a disability. So do you think that this should have been brought on earlier, or was it a bit too late to introduce this?
I don't know that it is ever too late to improve policy and to make policy better. And obviously, maybe it was an oversight, maybe it was not. But the truth is that it takes a responsible and a compassionate government to correct things that may or include persons that have previously been excluded. And but also the provision that was shared during the budget presentation is one that is going to be retroactive. And so parents of children or adults who now qualify for the special needs grant will be paid retroactively. And that allows for them to, it's not too late, because all of the funds that would have been allocated, you can now, you would be able to receive. And so I think that once again, it goes back to the willingness of governments and policymakers to continuously improve policy and to continue conversations, because we don't know everything. It is impossible for any government to know anything, and it should not be so complacent as to assume. And so in the instance where you recognize that you have made an error, or you recognize that a policy may not be as far-reaching as intended, you can correct that and course correct. And I did note that during the budget presentation, it was noted that dialogue and conversations will continue, so that persons who may be excluded due to the fact that a condition may be rare will be included. And I think that as we see the rollout of the bill for the persons living in Barbados with special needs, as well as the enactment of the policy to make life more comfortable for persons living in Barbados with special needs, with disabilities, we are going to see improvement on policies that will enhance their quality of life and make Barbados more inclusive and more tolerant as well of everyone, because we also have to match these things with education and with other support and other interventions, so that it's more than simply persons receiving a grant, but there is a genuine understanding in Barbados across the board of how persons are affected by disabilities.
Well, the Barbados Youth Development Council fully support the measures outlined and the views of everyday young people. That is, be fully supporting, and is the measures that are welcome. As Roshana says, it's never too late to improve policies, it's never too late to do the right thing. I see it as a step in the right direction, and that the government is prioritizing young people with different abilities. And I think that's good.
Okay, so looking at children and education, we saw in the proposal that there was a need for more people to more foster parents. And the payment or the stipend for foster parents increased to about $200. So do you think that $200 would be enough for that foster parent? Because in reality, raising a child today is expensive. Is expensive, and it is an expense in itself. And you know, they also have other things to take on in terms of utilities, school, different things to take on. So do you think that $200 would do justice to that parent, or should it be more being put forward?
Oh, you look for me. So what I would say from a National Youth Council standpoint is that I don't have the breakdown in numbers to be able to examine line by line if $200 is an increase. I do acknowledge there's an increase. What I will say is that having grew up near the Nightingale Children's Home, and there are several children in the home that would like to benefit from going into foster care, going out in terms of like the structure in terms of Nightingale, where everybody living there, and to be able to enter that family-like type of atmosphere. So with government's call to have more foster parents, that is one I do fully support. But at the time where the BYDC is able to break down the numbers, we will be in a position, therefore, to make an informed statement.
I want to acknowledge that fostering children is a heavy responsibility, and it can have its challenges. However, I think that in order to put this conversation into context, we have to first understand what foster parents currently do and what is expected of them. And so the expectation would be that someone who offers to foster a child can take care of certain responsibilities, such as things like their own utilities and their rent. And so the stipend being offered is more of a support than it is to cover the cost of the child that is being fostered. And so there will always be argument that it is not enough. And the same way that we will always have discussion or disagreements about how much money is enough for a salary. You know, some people say to live comfortably, they need $10,000 a month. Some people will say $5,000. My mother sent me to school with $10 shoes. I've never forgotten it. My mother sent me to school with $10 shoes. There are some parents who believe that their child cannot go to school with anything less than shoes for $150. And so it begs the question, what are the necessities, and what is the actual price point, and who does the responsibility fall to ensure these things? And so is $200 enough to raise a child? That depends on a lot of things. It depends on where you live, the kind of lifestyle that you have, the kind of habits that you foster, what you see as wants and what you see as needs. And like Caleb said, I don't believe that I am in a place to say that whether or not it is enough. I do not know the full arrangements between the government and foster parents, and I won't speak to that. But what I will say is that I think it is important to acknowledge that it is an increase, and that persons who are willing to open their hearts and homes to children who may be wards of the state or that the state may have responsibility for, those persons now have added support to what they had before. And foster care remains a very important part of how we protect and safeguard children and ensure that they're able to thrive and placing them in happy homes. And so I'll say this again, but once again, the need for balance and discussion so that we could continue to improve systems like this that people contribute to is really important. So who knows? Maybe this will open a discussion that it is or it is not enough, or there are other things that could be used to support persons who have children who are in foster care, and maybe we'll see other conversations emerging from this. But it is a start, and it is an increase.
Yeah, I like the point that you made when you said that we kind of have to analyze the situation of the foster parent, like if they're able to take care of the child, you know, and also handle other parts of their life. And I personally believe that any person who really deeply has a love for a child, to me, money wouldn't really be an issue. The fact that you're opening your heart and your home to give that child a love and support that they did not need, I feel like that is the most important. Yes, money would help, but I feel like personally, once you have it in you to foster that child, then that would be the primary goal of being a foster parent.
And also, I think we have to appreciate that being a foster parent should not be seen as an additional stream of income. That's not what it should be seen as. So this isn't simply money that you are receiving to, I want to say, supplement your income. This is money that should be allocated towards your child. And not receiving the money based on being a foster parent should not mean that you're unable to offer the child love and care. And so I really think that it's important for individuals, when taking on responsibilities, to be conscious of the expectations of those responsibilities and whether or not they can facilitate the care in the way that they need to. Because, like you said, a lot of times for children, attention and support are very, very important. I think I did okay with a parent who was quite willing to buy two pairs of $10 shoes to last me for a term, you know? And so if that is the case, then I think that the increase is something that should be applauded and open space for additional conversation.
We are looking at the one-time solidarity allowance. There were a lot of opinions about it. People were like, I am not going to stand in line for $300. I'm not going to do this and that. What are your thoughts on that?
I guess I would tackle it, Roshana. I'd love you to get your thoughts. But the solidarity allowance coming from young people is the general consensus. It is welcome. As I said up to today, someone tell me, let me know when it actually started. And the general, and the thing about it is that when I first listened to the budget, my understanding, and I don't know all Bajans understanding, was that it was only for people who was contributing to the NAS within a year. So then they listened to the Prime Minister's contribution last night and saying that they extend to every Barbadian, regardless if it be an NS or not, wants to show up with your ID and proof of address to get the money. I think that is something that is commended. And I don't think that no one will knock it down. I say that, you know, that is bad. It's something that's commendable. However, the concern that I'm hearing from young people is, of course, signing up in the line with the hot sun or lard with the umbrella. Or remember, for example, if employers are struggling to give you days already, if you're the employee, the year they decide to be late, they're going to get $300. So that the system and the rollout has to be one of perfection. It has to be one that takes into account online. So, for example, that money should be able to hit my account. Digitization is real. So it's just the system and the rollout is that, you know, in the stand-up in the line. But once that is fully hatched out and fully revealed to the public, then, yeah.
Yeah, so I generally agree with Caleb. Obviously, there's been a lot of discourse. I've seen the comments that it's not enough, but is $300 then received before simply as a gift? I want to see a return on some of the return on some of the work that the government has done, and being able to offer citizens $300. I've seen other persons say, if you don't want yours, then I'll take it for you. And so there have been a lot of really good reactions in the thought that there's, you know, all Barbadians are now entitled this year to $300 coming from the budget presentation. Of course, the rollout, like Caleb mentioned, is one that persons have been raising questions about. And so it'll be interesting to see how it is rolled out. But we also must also acknowledge or take it for what it is, that there are instances where our systems, electoral and boundaries, a lot of our databases have a lot of different information. And so this may also provide a very good opportunity for us to update information that may not be in the system already. So, for example, where persons, your address numbers, national insurance numbers, all of these different things are things that may be able to assist the government. And so
my thoughts therefore then is that the government should do a two-pronged approach where that, for example, those who are already in the system will have the online and automated process to wake up in the morning and see $300 extra to your account, and those who are not will come and go to the satellite site.
So that's exactly what I was heading to, because we already facilitate, the government already facilitates online payments.
Correct.
Or direct transfers.
Yes.
And so I think we need to give it a moment.
A moment.
Let the government figure out. Let us figure out exactly what is happening and what is going, the rollout is going to look like.
Yes.
Because right now what we're doing is a lot of speculation in terms of how exactly the grant will roll out, you know, being cognizant of it being working days and persons having other obligations and all these different things that are happening. And maybe we'll see a very smooth, it's hopeful that we'll see a very smooth and well thought out distribution process happening. And so, yeah. But my overview and the feedback that I've been seeing is that people generally appreciate
general consensus.
Because like I said, it is 300 more than they received before.
Okay, so we've heard that residents in St. Lucie and St. Peter have been experiencing some water woes for quite some time. And in the proposal for the budget, it was announced that they will receive a $32 payment on the bills to help assist with that. And I personally think that from the beginning, the issue of the water should have been taken care of. Yes, the assistance is helpful. It is good that they're receiving some help, but I feel as though the problem should have been fixed from earlier on so that we would not have to arrive at this problem right now. So I want to kind of get you guys' thoughts on that.
The challenge with this is that there is no quick fix. It requires that we change a lot of the pipes in St. Lucie. And for it to be sustainable, it cannot be a quick fix. If we want to see St. Lucie and St. Peter and the persons who live there having water flowing from their taps that they feel confident enough to drink from the taps. I know that's a luxury that Barbadians enjoy that you don't experience anywhere else in the Caribbean or in the world as well. And so it means that because of our very old pipe system, that switching it requires that you do a full-scale switch. It's not enough to just switch one pipe here, because we do know that sometimes Water Authority fixes a pipe, they pave the road, MTW paves the road, and then a week later you see that that road has to be dug up again, not because the agencies aren't communicating, but because of how old our pipe system is and the amount of pressure that a new pipe can place on the system. And so it means that, unfortunately for the residences, there is no quick fix. It takes time for that replacement to happen. We know that it is a costly endeavor. And so I hope that as the pipe work continues and as MTW continues its work, that it's done in a manner that is quick, but that it is effective so that the residents can get some relief and so that they can once again go back to seeing clear water coming from their tap.
I think last night in the Prime Minister's contribution, she would have also touched on this and talking about the mains replacement and replacing the old rusty pipes. But I can tell you, I went to the Alexander School, that's in St. Peter, and when drinking from the tap, the water tastes rusty for true. There's no light. And I used to prefer my water from St. Michael, of course, over that, and the water was rusty, and that's what, a couple of years now that I would have left secondary school. And the problem that is faced in St. Lucie and St. Peter in terms of the rusty pipes is one, as Roshana said, that wouldn't have a quick fix. It's something that in terms of the infrastructure of late years ago. So, for example, the water fountain that is near Hero Square, right there by the old Churchy building, that was a monument dedicated to where back then Barbados sort of had would be the first Caribbean country to have drinking water coming up to the taps, and that money was placed there. So it gives a context in terms of how long these mains were placed on the ground in terms of the extent to which you will have to be able to dig up these mains and get it fixed. Now, zeroing in on your question in terms of the $32, is it I can't remember if it's $32 on the current bill. And what is the current bill for people? Is that, are they charged for dusty water usage? I don't know the details about that. For example, if they're charged for water that they don't use. So it's just like my concern. For example, I know that they're community tanks. Is it that they're paying for water for community tanks? I don't have details about that to really make a decision about that. But what I can tell you is that replacing mains and everything is no quick fix. And I can't say if the $32 is enough, but I don't know how long it's right. So yeah.
Yes, please. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that in just in the conversation and thinking about the budget, like I said, the budget is one that is reflective of the current times that we are facing. It is reflective of a government that is aware that the world outside us is filled with shocks. You know, we can't tell what is going to be the policy from day to day. And there's been a lot happening. And so it means that we have to ensure that we are internally resilient so that we can defend ourselves and protect ourselves and our citizens against shocks. It means that we must also ensure that our citizens are able to take on the world and to deal with the challenges that we are facing. So we've talked about climate resilience. We've talked about technology. We've had discussions on education and a lot of other things that are ultimately going to enhance the quality of life for Barbadians. And so I look forward to seeing more discussions come from the budget. I look forward to seeing Barbadians engage with the policies that we have so that we can see whether or not the budget has been successful and it has achieved the things that it wishes to do. Because one of the reasons, and I've always enjoyed watching the budget as a young child and now as a as adult, is that the budget provides a very easy to understand forum for citizens to understand the policies and the government's direction for the country for the next year. And so I believe that this budget is one that has set us on the correct trajectory, given what we see happening around us, both in the Caribbean, in Barbados, and in the Caribbean and in the world. Well, all three of those. So like I said before, I think that the budget showed a government that wants to balance the economic and fiscal responsibilities with the need for human and social capital development in Barbados. And the Barbados Labour Party continues to do that.
My point of view from the Barbados Youth Development Council, hearing the views of young people through our Google Forum, social media, and having conversations with the young people, is that the general consensus is that the budget gets a passing grade. We do hope that the money is allocated as outlined in terms of the estimates leading up to the various policies and plans that we are hearing from the ministries. We do hope that those monies are allocated correctly so that you can assist in the development of Barbados and uplift Bajans. Some concerns, however, is that we would like to see a resurgence of light manufacturing. You're hearing the talk about Barbados being an innovation hub. And what could happen is those existing sites, those industrial sites, for example, like Grisettes and everything, so the sorts that are not in use now, you can turn that into be the innovation hub for Barbados and employ young people, so that young people who may not be inclined to the tourism industry, that don't want to go in tourism industry, there are other avenues locally for them to be able to generate much needed income. What I was looking forward to hearing the budget, however, too, as well, is greater emphasis placed on the orange economy. For example, young people earning on TikTok and YouTube. I know that there's this particular TikToker. She would have outlined that she has to change her account to US account to be able to make money off for it. However, that should not be happening. And I do look forward to probably what Ministry of whatever Division of Culture working with Economic Affairs and Investment, looking at how we could be able to work with these social media giants so that young people who want to go on TikTok and make money like anybody else. For example, what Rihanna had, all these TikTokers here, and they make money on TikTok, so Bajans can be able to make money on TikTok having a local account so that young people could benefit, so that there's a greater push towards generating economic activity for the orange economy. And lastly, young people continue to share the burden. We are grateful for the partial bounty that the government will provide in terms of the $300 allowance. And young people look forward to in the very near future to have the full bounty. So, yeah.
Yes, please. Thank you. Roshana and Caleb. I enjoyed sitting with you guys and hearing your thoughts on the different topics that were brought up. And I think that I would have learned something based on the conversation today. And I thank you both for your time and for your contributions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having
me. I am Ashira Joseph, and thank you so much for tuning in to Nationwide. Join us next time for another episode.